Welcome to Refuge Radio. I'm your host, Kristen Berry. You know, Refuge Radio is a podcast about the National Wildlife Refuge System and the issues that are facing the millions and millions of acres of lands and waters owned by all of us. National Wildlife Refuges are iconic places that span from the deepest trenches of the ocean to some of the tallest mountains in North America. And some of those refuges are right in our own backyards. Today, we're going to explore the National Wildlife Refuge System as it impacts an urban center in Baltimore, Maryland. So sit back and enjoy the show. So here we are in Leakin Park, Gwynns Falls, right here in the heart of Baltimore, Maryland. And we're under a tent right now. And that's because it's been pouring down rain. Something like 4 or 5 inches of rain has fallen in the last 3 days. And we're expecting another 2 or 3 inches of rain. And here I am sitting across the table, a great picnic table, with Marlo Atkinson of the Greater Baltimore Wilderness Organization. Yeah. Marlo, welcome to the show.
Yeah,
welcome
thank you
to
for
Refuge
having
Radio.
Me.
I got to tell you, you're also part of our first one-on-one live podcast where we set up 2 microphones and we go eyeball to eyeball. We've been doing so many of these over the phone, and it's really exciting to be out in nature in an urban setting and actually speaking to somebody one-on-one. So welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm super excited, too. I'm glad that you suggested coming outside.
Yeah, no, and you know what? I think the listeners are going to hear some background noise. There's going to be birds. Actually, we can hear a BG&E pipeline going in the background.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But I don't know, Marlo, maybe tell us who you are and tell us who the Baltimore Wilderness Coalition is.
Yeah, so like we've been saying, I'm Marlo Atkinson, and the Greater Baltimore Wilderness Coalition, which I work for, is an organization that technically isn't an organization because we just are a coalition of all of our members. We didn't want to add more to the nonprofit realm in this area and feel like we were competitive. So we actually are just our coalition of about 45 members, agencies, local jurisdictions, nonprofits. So anything from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to like small community nonprofits that, you know, have 2 staff members. Mm-hmm. So we work towards creating more and protecting green infrastructure in all of Central Maryland. But we really look to foster connections between jurisdictions. So, you know, are there spots between Baltimore County and Baltimore City that there might be a green space there that just gets a little neglected because it's between jurisdictions? So we really look for that, and to also share knowledge and help communication between all of our members and non-members.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So you're bringing all these different groups together, community groups, federal agencies, NGOs. Talk about some of the challenges and successes with working with so many groups that are of various perspectives and viewpoints. I mean, how do you bring all of that together, especially without any formal structure?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely interesting. I think the formal structure helps us, but as you said, it also hurts us because if we want to apply for grants, per se, we have to apply as one of our member organizations. So I'm actually a National Aquarium employee, and my office is here at Outward Bound, which is a great example of the collaboration between all of the groups.
Right.
And it's a fun way to foster more connections so that to when we have to apply for grants. So there's been times where we're like, well, we need to apply for this grant in Baltimore City. Let's approach Baltimore City Rec and Parks, who is one of our member organizations. And we pulled together partners because of that. But it's also a challenge because if there's a tight deadline, you know, we have to spend more time communicating between organizations rather than just being able to apply as our own.
Sure.
So that's one of the challenges.
Is there a large strategic plan that you're working around? I mean, do you have a vision for the future that helps you sort of see around the dark corners and navigate some of those challenges?
Yeah. So we have a strategic plan that works towards, I should have explained a little bit of how green infrastructure is our backbone of our work, but we actually have four pillars that are equity, biodiversity, discovery, and resilience. So our strategic plan is focused around that work, and we've also we've picked some specific projects. So we have a project in South Baltimore and Garrett Park that's between Baltimore City and Anne Arundel County. And so we've been focusing a lot of our work around there. And we have some outreach work that we're doing. So it's kind of focused us in to look at a few projects rather than be like, let's try to take on all of Central Maryland.
Sure.
Because that would be a lot to do.
Well, and those four pillars help give you some guiding principles, right? That
correct.
It helps hone the message or the vision of what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, very cool. Can you provide any advice to other groups? I mean, you know, think about somebody who's in your shoes somewhere else and looking to try to create a collective impact model.
Yeah.
You know, what would you tell them? How would you tell them to get started? What should they be looking for?
Well, I would say it's 100% going to feel like you're herding cats for a while. So be prepared for that.
Yeah.
Know that you're not going to immediately get success with partners. Know that you have to show that you're here to do work collaboratively and to not compete. So I think that was definitely something we learned, was you are here to assist organizations in getting their own work done while also getting a larger vision implemented.
Sure.
So I would say come in with that mindset, and that's going to help you a lot not feel so frustrated initially, because it's long-term goals. And I think we all kind of know that in conservation, there's long-term goals, and you kind of need to keep that in mind as you get through those initial struggles of a collective impact model.
Journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
And I guess what I'm hearing you say there is that having a clear objective,
yes,
knowing where you're trying to get to, can help you ground yourself when it comes to the day-to-day.
Yes. Because you can get very lost in the day-to-day with a collective impact model, especially because I'm answering to so many different people every day. And if we didn't have a clear objective, I could definitely get lost in all of the side tasks and communications that I'm having, because once again, we're working for all of Central Maryland. So
sure.
There's endless projects that we could do and get lost in. So a clear objective is going to help you every day.
Yeah, because it's hard to say no. And sometimes you have to, right?
Yes. And that is definitely something I have learned, because I am a yes person and I'm very social too. So I get in lots of conversations saying yes to a lot of people. So no is a very good word to learn and to use.
In speaking with you before the show started, I think this next question is going to be a personal one to some degree, but can you share more about the partnership you have with the Patuxent Research Refuge?
Sure. Yeah. So,
and specifically Masonville Cove. We want to hear about that.
Yeah. So, like I said, we were speaking about it before we started recording, but I started out, my first job out of college was working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the Masonville Cove Refuge. So it was kind of the first few years of the refuge. So I was figuring out, what do we do? Like, what's important? How do we implement like our wildlife habitat goals at this urban refuge? So I ended up working a lot with the staff there, which are Living Classrooms Foundation, actually, and the staff at Patuxent, because I was new and I still really am kind of fresh to the conservation world. So having the support of Patuxent biologists is huge. I use them so often, as even for our work today. The Chesapeake Bay field office staff and the Patuxent staff are wildly helpful in their technical knowledge.
Sure. Having that science-based sounding board to go to is critical to making decisions and vetting ideas. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that it helps anytime you're having a conversation with somebody to know that you've got science on your side.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And we definitely, I mean, some of the exciting things partnership-wise that are happening too is, you know, today we're at an Outward Bound school and this is where my office is. And we've done some urban bird treaty city work here with the students.
Can you unload that with me a little bit? Tell me, what does that mean?
So, you know, they're urban bird treaty cities. It's a Fish and Wildlife Service designation. So we received a grant in 2015 or 16, to implement Urban Bird Treaty City work. For us, that meant doing service learning projects with the students, which was removing invasives and installing birdhouses here in the park. So if you look around, actually behind you, there's some birdhouses. Unfortunately, all the listeners can't see them all.
There's a really cool purple one on a tree over there.
Yeah.
If I was a bird, that's the one I would live in. It's the purple one.
Yeah. All the kids had a great time when we told them they could paint the birdhouses. That was definitely the highlight.
Did they make the birdhouses as well?
Yeah. So they fully built them, installed them, painted them. And there's actually been a lot of house wrens and bluebirds in them. So,
nice.
Yeah. So they've done those, did some invasive removal, and did some native tree plantings in the park. But some of the help from Patuxent staff there is they've actually been able to provide some knowledge for the Outward Bound staff here. So the Outward Bound staff takes kids out on the Appalachian Trail, on the Chesapeake Bay, and a lot of them might have backgrounds in conservation, but a lot of them don't. So they actually have a lot of teachable moments.
The Outward Bound instructors, you mean?
Yes, the Outward Bound instructors. They have a lot of teachable moments with these kids, and we have been linking up Patuxent staff to train the trainers, which are the Outward Bound instructors, to then be able to provide these teachable moments for kids.
Cool.
Yeah.
How do you see the National Wildlife Refuge Association's Urban Refuge Program assisting you with the work you have ahead? There's the work you're doing to prepare our next generation of conservation stewards with colleges and universities in Maryland, but if I'm not mistaken, you were also part of the BioBlitz that took place over Father's Day weekend?
Yeah, we do a lot. As I was reading these questions, I was like, wow, I think I did a lot of work.
It was hard to narrow the questions down. Yes, where do we want to go with this?
Yeah, we kind of do all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, as we were kind of just talking about, the Urban Wildlife Refuge model is so going to be so helpful as we move forward, because we need the technical staff to be supporting our work. Mm-hmm. And also, the federal... Yes, what is the word I'm looking for? Just the, trying to think of the word I'm looking for. Just like the kind name of, that comes
the
along.
Gravitas,
yes,
right?
The gravitas that comes with being
the bona fides that come from having that level.
Saying that we work with the Fish and Wildlife Service, we're an urban refuge program, we're an urban bird treaty city, that has created so much collaboration and projects to get done here, like the BioBlitz. So that was actually funded through our National Fish and Wildlife Foundation grant for the Urban Bird Treaty City work.
Not everybody knows what a BioBlitz is. Okay. Can you tell us about it?
So a BioBlitz is a citizen science event that brings together experts, biologists, and naturalists with the community. So we set up a bunch of stations that represent each taxa, so mammals, birds, reptiles. And then ours is pretty non-structured, so it's just open for the day. People come in, and we give them all of the tools that they would need to go out and identify anything.
Oh, cool.
And then we use iNaturalist, the app, which if you don't have it, everyone needs to be using it. It's amazing. It's an amazing tool. And we just sent...
iNaturalist, if you're listening, we are looking for a podcast sponsor. And now that we've gotten this endorsement, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. Yes. Hello. Please contact. So we have iPads available. We have nets so kids can go out and catch bugs. We took them down to the stream in the park here. We provided the boots and waders.
Sure.
And we set up hikes and,
You know what I love
surveys.
About the idea of what you just described is that that's the kind of thing where not only can a parent or grandparent or a friend, a relative, whatever, bring a kid into nature, but kids can bring their parents into nature. That to me, if the parents didn't grow up with being in the outdoors, don't know how to engage with it, but the kid hears about something like that, they can bring their parents and now the whole family's into it.
Yeah. And we actually, one of the most exciting parts for me was we actually had a bunch of kids show up who got the flyers in their backpack. So we just took flyers to all the local schools and they just put them in the kids' backpacks. And so many of them showed up because the parents were like, he got this in his backpack and he wanted to come.
Yeah, right.
And so it's not something that I think that they would have traditionally come to, but it got them out here. It offered a really soft approach into nature because, you know, naturalists were taking them onto the trails, showing them things, getting them excited rather than just being like, go. Be free. Explore on your own.
Well, and I think in today's learning environment, a little bit of structure goes a long way.
Yes. Yeah. And there are BioBlitzes that are way more structured, too, that become a little more, not to use a technical term, but science-y. And those are great, too. Sure. But it all depends on your audience. So here, we're just trying to get people into the park more. So we're trying to provide things that are structured, but also a little free.
Yeah. So I can hear just from your voice, and I'm sure everybody who's listening can too, your excitement about what's going on here and in this space. Can you give us a personal story, something your most memorable experience while working with the Greater Baltimore Wilderness Coalition?
Yeah, sure. This is going to sound so lame, but it was so exciting for me. We do this invasive removal work here. So the kids come back after 5 days being outside, not showering, being so tired. And then we're like, let's go pull vines. And they're like, we hate you. So we do that. I give them the whole spiel about, you know, why it's important to remove invasives and, you know, it preserves our tree canopy and, you know, some eyes glaze over, some get excited. And so then we remove invasives for 2 hours. And then the next day they leave. So we did that on a Friday evening. We did it. You know, some seem excited, some seem tired. The next morning, I'm here for work doing some things and the kids are about to do their graduation. They're out here in this field. And I see four, like, 14-year-old boys at a tree removing English ivy. And I walk up and I'm like, oh, my gosh, what are you guys doing? And they're like, oh, I mean, you said that this was so bad. And, like, we have to save this tree.
Gotta pull weeds.
And I was like, if I tell this story, people are going to think I'm such a nerd and also think I'm making it up. But that was, like, the best day for me, that it actually stuck with these kids. And the next day they were standing there doing
That's awesome.
It was
That's
amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, we need more stories like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, is there anything I haven't asked you that you wish I would? That puts everybody on the spot, I know.
Right? Like,
is there something you want to tell me that I haven't asked about?
There is a really one thing that we didn't have a chance to talk about is we've done a job fair here. That's part of we've gotten some funding for it federally and state. And it was a job fair that we did last year, and we're going to continue this fall. And it was in the heart of Baltimore to try to get more kids out to look at green jobs. And we had about 50 organizations come out, and we also talked about cultural competency. So I think that's a huge thing that we need to be thinking about in the conservation field, and we talk about, and it's one of our pillars, is equity. And it's something that, as we do more urban work, we need to be discussing.
Yeah.
You know, if we want more kids to get into the field, we need to look at ourselves and be like, maybe what are we portraying?
Sure.
That's putting up barriers.
I had an interview. It was a video interview with an intern staffer at Patuxent who said that when he goes into a classroom and he speaks Spanish, and a kid who maybe they speak Spanish at home sees that he's working in nature, they make a connection that they can't make anywhere else. They see that somebody like them is working in this space, and that means that it's okay for them to want to pursue that too.
Yes.
It's so huge. I mean, it moved me when he told that story. It just blew me away. And it, quite frankly, it never had occurred to me in that way.
Right.
And that's because I grew up with a bunch of people aspiring to be a bunch of people that do look like me.
Right.
And so it's sort of an unconscious bias almost that it hit me in the face so strongly. Mm-hmm. And it's so important.
And that's kind of like the start of it, is we need people who are telling those stories so that people can have that realization, and then next steps. So that was kind of last year's cultural competency training, was people getting up and telling these stories. Now we're like, okay, now what do we do in right. our workplaces right. to make it better?
Yeah. What yeah. do you think that next step is?
Oh, man. Oh, come on.
How about this? We'll save that for another show.
Yes. Let me prepare for that one.
Absolutely. I've had so much fun chatting with you, and it was such a good excuse to come out to this beautiful place where you get to work and I bet play a little bit.
Yes.
Will you do a show with us again in the future?
Oh, my gosh. I would love to.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Marlo Atkinson is the coordinator of the Greater Baltimore Wilderness Coalition. Before she was in her current role, she spent a year volunteering at the Chesapeake Bay Field Office through the Chesapeake Conservation Corps. Her work here was very important to helping Baltimore become an urban bird treaty city. Marlo, thanks a lot for chatting with us.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time on The Refuge Radio.